Welcome to TalkErie.com's Joel Natale Show, Erie, Pennsylvania's daily podcast. Every day, we tackle the biggest issues that the Erie, PA region faces. Stay informed and involved as we advance the narrative of Erie. Now, here's Joel Natale.
And with us is Mary Beth Wilcher. She is the program director for the Center of Family Business. Mary Beth, thanks so much for coming on the show. Appreciate it. You got it here. Kind of step up to that mic. It's a quiet one. And we have with us Greg Yon from Advanced Finishing USA, and he's also the chair of the board for the Center of Family Business. Greg, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Thanks for coming on. All right. So we're a family show. We like the origin stories. Mary Beth, you want maybe kind of share, what got you into this role? How'd you come up? Are you a local person or did you transplant in here?
No, I'm local. I actually graduated from East High School back in 1982 and from Mercy First University
in 86. I come from a banking background.
Okay.
Yeah, and I also come from an insurance background and wealth management. And in all those fields, I pretty much worked a lot with family-owned businesses. So I saw a lot of their challenges, and I did what I was able to do to help them.
Yeah, trying to get capital is like a big deal for family businesses, isn't it?
It is, yes.
I mean, when you think about all the different... We like to talk about capital stacks. Well, sometimes you just need a checking account and to be able to handle accounts payable and accounts receivable, right?
Well, you have to also show that you have money in the bank and that you make a good income.
There you go. Yeah. It's hard to borrow.
It's not always easy. Yeah, you're right.
There's something there. Greg, how about you? You grew up in Erie?
I was born and raised in Mill Creek, graduated from McDowell. And then went on to Barron for 2 years and down to University Park to get my engineering degree in 1985.
Okay, yeah. So we're kind of in the same era there. I had buddies that did exactly that. Went to Barron and then went to State College for engineering.
Yeah, then I came back and got an MBA at Barron. So I've actually graduated from both University Park and Barron.
Good for you. And tell us a little bit about Advanced Finishing USA.
Advanced Finishing USA was originally Erie Advanced Products. My dad, Walter Yon, started the company back in 1970. He was also a Penn State industrial engineer, class of 54, and my grandfather was 1915 mechanical engineering. So,
really? Yeah. You have that many Penn State layers? That's amazing.
It goes a ways back. But he started the business. He worked for American Sterilizer Company for a number of years and kind of got bored with the bureaucracy of big business. Mm-hmm. You need a hammer, you put in a requisition. 2 weeks later, they give you a hammer, and you're going, oh, yeah, well, we used a piece of pipe.
Oh, wow.
So he started his own business, and it was really, it was more of a project, an experiment. And, he became aware of powder coating and metal finishing and saw the future and the potential. He literally started on a second floor of where now Erie Press is on 12th Street, 12th and Cranberry. They've torn that building down since, that part of it. But with a used pizza oven and a used spray gun, and he would powder coat little parts for GE and for AMSCO, and that's how he got started, and then kind of grew from there. And we moved to Mill Creek and had built a building and put on 14 additions over the years. My brother came in 75, I came in 85, and then I moved us out to Fairview in 2000. And when I came on, we were about 200,000 in sales, and now we're about 6 million.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
There are so many questions I have, and we'll get to them there. But it is amazing. Mary Beth, do you in your view of this, is there a lot of companies like Greg's where it was just kind of started by someone who was trying to solve a problem and again using unique means, right? Maybe borrowing a few dollars or borrowing a piece of equipment to get something started, to be a launch point.
Exactly. Those are our true entrepreneurs. And now we're dealing with a second generation and a third generation who are not necessarily the entrepreneurs, but they're the business owners now.
Okay. And again, there's a lot of fun stuff that can go on with all of that. All right. So let's start with the Center Family Business. I think we've, you know, in our earlier conversations, we've talked about how it brings value. One of the first things that we talked about is just a sense of community. So, first off, how is the word getting out? It doesn't hurt to be on the radio a couple times and also the front of the business magazine, the Manufacturers and Business Associations magazine this month.
Exactly. You know, we were in the right place at the right time. They approached us because the June edition was all about family-owned businesses. And we said, that's us. You know, that's our market. That's who we're trying to reach.
Amazing stuff. Okay, so as people find out about it, are they kind of signing up for that? Hey, I wanna be able to network with people that have the like mind, whether they are the initial entrepreneurs or they're one or two, three generations down the pike.
Yes, they are interested in networking with like-minded individuals, and that's one thing that they ask. Actually, when they are interested in signing up, they also want to know, well, what are they going to learn, like programming wise?
Yeah.
And actually, we followed a local survey that also matched a national survey of what family owned and privately held businesses were looking for.
Talk about that, Greg. I mean, let's talk about the community part of this, of like, hey, I'm part of something, these people that I'm interfacing with maybe once a quarter or every month, they kind of get me.
Well, you know, one of the things that family businesses face is the challenge of oftentimes you find yourself on an island. You know, you are, you've got your business, you've got your challenges, and you don't necessarily have support. You know, I like to say when I bought my brother out and I became sole owner of the business, I had a lot of discussions with the guy in the mirror, and he didn't have any more answers than I did.
That's amazing, too.
It is true. And, there's financial issues, there's advertising, there's employment issues, there's environmental issues, there's, you know, energy, there's costs, there's payroll. You know, markets go up and down. We've lived through some pretty hard times in 2009. You know, I've been to the edge, and there I stood and looked down. A lot of companies didn't make it. I wish at that point that I had someplace like the Center for Family Business to go and get help, legal help, accounting help, advice, succession planning, hiring, firing. You know, when my dad started the company, it was kind of a little bit of a science experiment. And it was very unorganized, and he really didn't like the organization. He left a very well-organized bureaucratic business. But that's fine for a small business, but
sure.
As you grow, and if your ambition is to get larger, you need structure, you need forms, you need consistency, and you know, rather than have to develop all that on your own, it's good to have a resource to be able to go lean on and you know, become a member of, have peer groups, talk to other companies that, you know, share your experiences, your problems, your solutions. And that's really what I think the center brings.
I'm kind of feeling the challenge that you're describing here. And Meredith, I want to ask you: is running a family business seemingly harder today? As you talk to your membership, is it getting more complicated and more difficult, or with the technology, with the productivity that comes from the technology, is it getting easier?
No, it's actually getting harder. That's what the member businesses are telling me, and a lot of it has to do with they don't necessarily have the same values that their founding fathers had when they started the business. You know, they care more about sustainability than they really care about other factors.
When you say sustainability, just to be able to make it through the next quarter or the next 36 months? I mean, of keeping the business going, or are you talking more of a global?
More of a global issue.
Okay.
Like, you know, how do we save water? You know, how do we not damage the atmosphere with the products that we're producing? That's more of an emphasis for the new generation.
So, yeah, kind of more of a awareness of climate change, awareness of the impact that the business might have on the community around it. I would imagine that even the raw materials that you use are a bit more ecologically oriented, right? I mean,
well, you know, one of the benefits of powder coating is it's a non-toxic, non-hazardous, non-solvent, no fumes, no volatile organic compounds. So it's an environmentally friendly finishing to begin with.
Okay.
And, you know, when we started in this path years ago, back in 1970, you know, by far the majority of finished metal in the country, in the world, was painted or anodized, galvanized, you know, toxic processes with byproducts and materials and fumes and hazardous waste. And you know, all industries have gone through this this kind of epiphany of we can't continue to just put out what we used to. One of the businesses in town that's no longer with us, but they had a finishing operation for their product. And I remember talking to the general manager, and they used to take their chemicals and spray it on the weeds outside the building to kill them.
Oh, my word.
Well, you know, you're talking back in the 60s and 70s.
They didn't think about the groundwater.
Nobody thought about that.
No.
When I started at the business, I mean, I was 12. There was no, you know, child labor laws. Mm. I mean, you know, it was a different world back then. I think today all businesses face much more challenges. Everybody's a little smarter. There's more regulation. There's more to hold you accountable today than there used to be. And I think that's a good thing, but it certainly, makes it a little more challenging to run a business as the world changes and your business progresses. It has to change as well. And, you know, you're making your product, so you want to keep consistency and follow a path, but the world around you is changing. So, you know, there's an awful lot of adaptability in there.
The Center for Family Business at Penn State Barron, it's ability to bring some great communication and outreach and also connection to family businesses. According to the website, small businesses, family-owned businesses, make up about 90% of all small businesses in the region, and so they talk about things like succession planning, estate planning, social media, management information, and other aspects critical to the success of family-owned businesses. And I want you both to kind of weigh in on this whole idea. You know, the first bullet point on the website is this family dynamic issue. And so, Greg, you kind of lived this where you didn't start the business. It was your parent that started it. And you have a couple different layers of hierarchy. Walk us through all that.
Okay. As I said, my father started the business in 1970, and he went at it for the first number of years. And my brother came in 75 when he graduated from college. And the two of them worked together to you know, grow the business slowly and take on customers and buy equipment and build processes. I came in 85 when I graduated from Penn State, and I did not want to come to work for the business. I wanted to go out and get experience in a big company and then bring that back to the business. And, you know, they sat me down and said, we need an engineer, and if, you know, you don't take the job, you're out. Like, okay. And I call it the golden handcuffs. It was a great opportunity, but I wasn't ready for it. We weren't ready for it. But we managed. We made it through. Mm-hmm. And then I bought my brother out in 2006. So I owned the whole company at that point. And, when he and I owned it, it was 50-50. I mean, my dad had us both owning it. And, he was kind of a ping pong ball that would go back and forth from Jeff's office to my office.
Wow.
When we had a disagreement, it was, you know, it was not a good scenario. Let's put it that way. It's, you know, when you got two captains and one says go right and the other says go left, you go straight, and if that's over the waterfall, that's where you end up.
Wow.
So it is a challenge, and there are a lot of pitfalls in the family business hierarchy and structure. You know, you got a sibling that needs a job, and you have an opening in sales. It doesn't matter if they're qualified.
Right.
They're at the top of the list. And you wouldn't see that in a Fortune 500 or a publicly traded company. They're going to look at resumes and hire the best person for the job. In the family business, that's not always the case. And, you know, so there are a lot of dynamics that are particular to family businesses and proprietorships that you don't, people don't really know how to deal with. And they muddle along, do the best they can.
Mary Beth, I want you to weigh in on the other side of this and Greg, you know, referred to this of the golden handcuffs, like you didn't have a lot of chance. I'm interested in that now third, you know, for some of these companies, it's the third generation, and it's like, I have no desire to go work for the plant. I don't have no desire to go work for the tire company, or, you know, sometimes it's retail, and it's like, you know, you got granddad, dad, one kid, and then like the genes aren't there anymore. What do you do? You have to build some kind of succession plan, right?
Exactly. A lot of businesses right now are actually learning, you know, best practice across the country. There's over 50 centers for family business in North America, and they've done studies and they've talked to business owners, and the best practice seems to be a family member, junior family member, actually going to college and going away somewhere and working for anywhere from 2 to 4 years in an outside world, you know, preferably a larger company, and then bring that knowledge back to the company and start pretty much at the bottom and work their way up so they get the respect of the employees that work there. And then they are able to transition better into leadership roles.
Is there something generational, though, that's happening right now? And again, we talked about how we're in that similar generation, Greg, but what about the millennials and the Gen Zers? There's so much out there for them.
Well, I have four kids, and you know, unfortunately, their interest. Penn State didn't offer any degrees, and you know, artificial intelligence is my daughter, and film is my son, and dance is my other daughter, and fashion design is my other son.
None of that sounds like powder coating.
Yeah, well, exactly. And so they didn't fit into Penn State.
Yeah.
And I didn't make them go. I wanted them to pursue their dreams because I didn't want to put the golden handcuffs on them.
Right.
But none of them have an interest in coming to work for the business. They've all worked there. They've all worked there for summers. They got good experience. They worked well. But, you know, that's not their passion. So I want them to follow their passion. And so they're not going to be in the business. So I have a succession plan issue. You know, I have to come up with a way to deal with this. And, you know, that's a very deep topic.
Sure.
Because, you know, I've had offers to sell. And if I sell my business to a private equity firm in Boston, there isn't going to be any support for Barron or Hammett or Presque Isle or the zoo. That all goes away. And chances are within a couple of years, they're going to move the business out of Erie.
So, and this is the essence of why Barron felt that this was a major felt need in Erie, is because there's just guys that are facing this wall here.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got a company and, you know, so many businesses don't have a proprietary product. They don't have, you know, the Smith widget that's theirs that they own.
The channel lock.
Yeah, exactly. They make products for other companies, mm-hmm. and when those companies find capacity elsewhere, they move it. So it's a challenging business in the beginning. But then when they decide they want to retire, you know, what do you do? You got employees, you got customers, you've got, you know, you're a small economic force in the region, and you want to pull away. You know, it's a challenge, and that's part of what we're hoping to solve. There's so many of these small businesses, and if, you know, family businesses go from two people to, you know, PHB and Modern Industries. I mean,
that's
there's
it.
Huge family businesses. So clearly, you know, it's a need in the region.
We were talking about succession planning, and the center is having a seminar coming up here on succession planning. It's a big hot topic right now.
Yes, it is. It's being held on Tuesday, June 21st at the Manufacturers and Business Association on 38th Street. The time is 11:30 until 1:30, and there's still time if anybody is interested in making a reservation. If you are already a member of the center, it's free to attend. If you are not a member, it is $100 per person. And actually, you can use that and add it up over 1 year's time to actually pay for an annual membership of $500.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So people can get this is a good catching type of
situation. It includes an actual working lunch. And okay. I'm bringing in two speakers from the Cleveland area, actually.
The key that people need to understand that this is all about family-owned companies, right? And
right.
And you're meeting every month. Tell us about how some of these meetings are going.
Well, I've only had a few of them because we just started up the program in January. You know, we didn't actually really launch anything until February. And that was
Have you been able to be all in person up until now, or
actually, we had one Zoom one.
Okay.
We had to do, and that was on the family dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
But the other ones, you know, we're pretty much trying to do in person, and I'm also stacking on some other Zoom meetings that other family business centers across the country are also offering.
I see.
And so, those are always at no cost.
So you're able to leverage some of the other content that's out there.
Absolutely.
Very cool.
Yeah. If anybody's interested in signing up for membership and or this event, actually they can go to barron.psu.edu/family-business.
Okay.
All of our events, RSVP information is all out there on the website.
Let's talk about some of these other challenges that members or potential members might have here. I find it interesting. Again, we kind of referred to this earlier about access to capital. Is there something particular about a family-owned business that makes it harder? You were saying, Mary Beth, that you really need to have reserves on hand if you're looking to borrow, right? Is there any anecdotal sharing that you can make about that, or what are you hearing about access to capital?
I'm hearing a lot of LLCs out there. You know, they think that they can just, you know, go get a mortgage. You know, they just, you know, took over the family business, and they're not really showing any income yet. And they don't understand you have to show the income in order to get those types of capital loans.
How about you, Greg? When you were growing the business, you obviously grew by leaps and bounds. Was capital ever an issue?
Yeah, we actually had several significant challenges with loans back in the 2008-2009.
Well, that was
slowdown.
A bad time, yeah.
And you know, we had a lot of debt. We had built a building. We'd added facilities, capital expenditures, and those loans were, you know, we're being paid, but you know, banks are—they're in business to make money, and you know, you have to maintain your ratios. You got to have a good quick ratio, current ratio. You know, when the economy starts sliding and things change, that perspective changes, and suddenly there's a lot more pressure for the banks. They're saying, you know, well, I know you're doing okay, but you know, we're not comfortable with the future, and so we're going to increase your rates, or we're going to, you know, add some stipulations.
Were they more concerned about your debt to income ratio as opposed to your current operating ratios?
Well, we were profitable. We were still making money. We were making payroll, but
right. But
we weren't making enough for them to be comfortable.
Interesting.
You know, you got to be profitable to a certain degree in order to for banks to want to lend you money. I mean,
do you think that those models still work? And again, I don't want to get into the weeds so much, but Meredith, you kind of referred to to some of the newer types of companies. Not everybody has a, you know, a physical plant like Greg has. I mean, some of these folks, family businesses are service-based, you know, or they're franchises, you know, of installations and things. I would imagine, you know, in Erie, we have a lot of great bankers, and so we're able to kind of be flex, but the business has changed so much.
Yeah. Cash is still king.
Okay.
And, you know, liquidity will get you in the door to a bank. I mean, that's just the way it is. Like Greg was saying, you have to manage the risk. And in 2009, you know, the banks actually realized that they took on too much risk. And it hurt everybody.
And having all that skin in the game sounds, I mean, like if you're going to be a startup, certainly you need to have, you know, a lot behind you there. This is an interesting one. High turnover of non-family members. Like there's a two cash system in a family business. What are ways that we can guard against that? Greg, how do you do it? Well, it's all you anyway. So,
you know, the basic rule of thumb in any business is you got to treat your employees well. You know, you need to treat people well. You need to compensate them well. You need to treat them like human beings and understand that they have families and their job is not their life. And you need to approach it that way. You know, when you're, I mean, look, when Dad wanted me there on Saturday morning at 6, I was there Saturday morning at 6.
You got the memo, right?
He wasn't paying me overtime.
No.
I was just going to be there.
Yeah.
And,
wow.
You know, in the family scenario, you know, you have different rules to some degree. But, you know, there's always a distinction between family and non-family. And you know, and as an owner, you really have to be careful. I mean, when my kids worked there in the summer, they were bottom of the pole. I mean, you know, you can't put them above other people if you want to maintain a respectful workforce. And, you know, if people are going to be dedicated, they have to be treated fairly.
Let's talk about what you're hearing from your membership as far as workforce. Again, that is the universal complaint that I'm getting from all sectors, you know, whether it's manufacturing or the trades. Nobody can find anybody to work. And it's such a broad brush because workforce participation here in Erie County is actually not that bad compared to some other metropolitan areas in Pennsylvania. But what are some of the anecdotes that you're hearing from your members, Mira?
I'm hearing it's very competitive out there. Actually, not so much even in the manufacturing. Actually, the manufacturing business, the family-owned ones, actually had really good years, you know, during this last, you know, COVID stage.
Yeah.
In comparison, you know, to non-family owned businesses. But, you know, just getting the people trained in aspects that they're looking for, like auto mechanics, it's hard to get them in. Landscapers, they can't find anybody that wants to work.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where they're getting any money to live, but I mean, I have to work.
According to one of the undersecretaries of labor in Pennsylvania, she was able to get people to work for her because she paid a lot. Is the wage situation in Erie having to change finally? Because we've always had lower wages than the rest of the state, and we have a lower family income than the rest of the state. But is that under pressure now because people don't want to work, or the labor seems to be like a labor force shortage?
The salaries are definitely lower in Erie and lower in Pennsylvania. You know, the starting wages in all of Pennsylvania are probably lower than most other states.
Yeah. But are you feeling that there's pressure to bring those up?
I think some people are. Everybody seemed to be able, you know, to manage, you know, with less people. But that is only sustainable for so long. You know, those people burn out and they retire early. And a lot of businesses are actually seeing that and they weren't prepared for it.
Wow. Greg, weigh in on that workforce part of this thing. What are you hearing from your friends that are family businesses?
You know, good people are always hard to find.
Yeah. Well, it's got to be hard when you're a mom pop and you're competing against Hobby Lobby that's willing to pay $18 an hour.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the restaurant business is obviously you know, a good example where you just can't find employees and people that are willing to work. You know, in manufacturing, you've got a little bit of a different wage structure. I think that's a little more stable, but there are certainly other service-based family businesses and small businesses that are really struggling because people are reluctant to put themselves out. I mean, you know, a lot of things have changed. You know, being a teacher didn't used to be a life-threatening job.
Wow.
Being a waiter, being a stewardess didn't used to be, you didn't have to be a corrections officer, you know.
It's true.
There are a lot of dynamics out there that have changed. And so jobs that were traditionally, you know, had a, you know, a connotation or a history of one thing, today, you know, that's changed. Usually, I mean, I don't know, I could never figure out how people could work as a server in a restaurant and get $3 an hour and the rest was tips. I'm like, how do they pull that off?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, they should be making at least minimum wage. That's mm-hmm. what minimum wage is supposed to be.
You would think, yeah.
And so, you know, I think there's been a lot of change. I know our structure has changed. Our review process has changed. We review our employees on their anniversary date. You know, it used to be waited till the end of the year and then gave everybody, you know, an evaluation and whatever increase in bonus was going to be at the end of the year. We've changed that, and we're much more proactive, giving each employee individual attention and that individual interview on their anniversary date through the course of the year. And our overall payroll has gone up considerably.
Wow.
But you have to. I mean, and a lot of that, just as the times change, if you're going to be competitive and you're going to maintain a business and you're going to get employees that are going to come and work, you need to treat them well and you need to pay them a fair wage.
Do you feel that, I mean the quit rate right now, 4 million in April or something like that, it's just mind-boggling to me. And the question is, you know, how much of this is generational? How many of the boomers are just kind of aging out of these roles? And is there enough, especially in a town like Erie, where we've had population loss? I mean, isn't that really going to be the existential threat for all of family business, of just having the talent to be able to grow?
Well, I think one of the things that, you know, and I don't want to speak out of turn, but when I look down the road, year, 2 years, 3 years from now, I want to see Penn State Behrend offering classes in family business, emphasized, you know, degrees to help train your, you know, you can send your kids to college to get a better education on how to run a family business so they can stay here. And they can continue to run the business. You know, I've had two really good stories where employees have left to go somewhere else for more money, and I've gone out and talked to them and said, you know, I wish you the best. You got a place here if you ever want to come back if it doesn't work out. And two of them came back and said, you know what, I was there for a week, and they just don't treat people well.
Wow.
And they came back. And that, you know, that's a good message. That sends a good message to us and to the rest of the workforce.
And again, I think the big mistake that some family businesses would do is they would take a personal affront about someone that was just trying to advance their family a little bit, and they're kind of seeing if the grass is greener. And like what you're saying, Greg, it's not always greener, is it?
No, it's not always greener. And that's one reason why we started the Leadership Development Program at the center, is actually because there's a lot of business owners who are actually like mentoring, you know, their, you know, C-level suite, their VP suite, and trying to, you know, bring them up and actually see what cream rises to the top.
Sure.
And they realize they have to have the skills in order to do that.
So there's a lot of what you're trying to offer is to that owner, to these family businesses, we need to train you mm-hmm. because there's some skills here that are not picked up when you're bootstrapping this thing.
Yeah, it's not necessarily transferred through your DNA. It's a skill-based program. And actually, Penn State Behrend is actually looking at developing a certificate program in leadership.
Okay.
And that's going to be the first step. You know, then we are interested in moving into a minor in family business and then potentially a major. Now, it's not going to happen overnight.
Right.
But we know that there is a strong need and a strong demand, and there are some other universities in the U.S. that are already starting to offer those.
I'm down to my last 4 minutes with our friends here from the Center of Family Business. I want you both to weigh in on what you feel is the immediate future of family business. Again, I'm certainly concerned about the boomers that are just getting tired. Okay, so boomers are now, I'm a boomer. I was born in 62. 64 is the end of the boom, right? And so they're 58 years old. So that means that at the far end, if they wait till 70, you know, there's 12 more years of the boom, and they're probably going to all want to be out. So this is like a cliff, in my opinion. So what do you think is the are we going to be stable for now, or is there a lot of challenges facing family businesses as boomers kind of age out?
Well, that's what we're trying to focus on, is actually build the business bench up, you know, so to speak. You know, basketball, you know, you want to have a strong bench, because as it rotates up, you don't want to have a hole. And that's where all of our programs are actually for the business owners and leaders, you know, future leaders in those businesses. So they're not left, you know, high and dry. So they've got, you know, well-educated, wise people that know the value of empathy and emotional intelligence with their employees, you know, so their employees aren't walking out the door because they're working for a bully.
Wow, yeah. I'm hearing the emphasis on the owners. I'm thinking of that boomer that has maybe 10 more years to go at it. But what about the 35-year-old that could be on the bench, could be the reliever?
Well, you know, I will say I know a lot of fellow business owners in Erie, and you know, the good news is that there are plenty of examples where, you know, their son or daughter didn't really plan on coming into the business, but got involved and started realizing just how nice it is to be your own boss, to run the business, to own the business. And you know, I think that there's plenty of opportunity out there. The key is for the boomers and the older generation to make sure that their business model and their business, you know, their mission statement and value statements are in line with the future generation. That they're going to want to come in and take over this business, because you're paving the way for a good business. You know, and you make it attractive for the next generation. I know that, you know, none of my kids right now are, you know, have any interest. But if things didn't work out and they you know, if they got disillusioned in the vision that they have right now,
sure,
they've got the capability, and you know, I'd run them through the center and get them some training and education, and they could certainly step in and take over the business.
So the outcomes we're looking for are sustainable and thriving businesses. Again, the old narrative was that when the boomers would take over, they would run these businesses into the ground. We could all point to famous brands in Erie that were started by you know, the greatest generation that didn't make it,
right?
The second generation. Now we're, the second generation is, the boomers are well ensconced, and we're trying to pass that baton again, and also, you know, kind of right size things and so on. So, but the bottom line is that we want a thriving family business culture in Erie.
Absolutely. It's what actually, I think it's actually what's going to make Erie grow and prosper, you know, even more than we're already doing right now. You know, we need to have the footwork in the business industry here to keep the people here and not let them move out of town with private equity buyouts.
Yeah, that is the great contagion, isn't it? Mm-hmm. All right, how do people get involved? What's the best place to start?
I'd say best place to start is actually go to our website, and that is barron.psu.edu/family-business, If they're interested in actually attending an event, actually they can RSVP right there. If they're interested in contacting me about membership, I'll be happy to stop out and talk to them. I can be reached at mjw5982@psu.edu.
Beautiful. Mary Beth Wilcher, Greg Yon from the Family Center for Family Business at Penn State Barron.
You've been listening to The Joel Natale Show, Erie, Pennsylvania's daily podcast from TalkErie.com. Subscribe to our show on your favorite podcatcher and get involved by emailing joel@talkerie.com.